The importance of reading to children early and often. The long-term economic, social, and psychological benefits of early reading are well documented. Evidence shows that a child's success in life is based in large part on whether or not he or she reads well by the fourth grade, and that exposure to words and books as a toddler makes a huge difference. The State Department of Education has launched the Read to Me Challenge for the month of February to encourage people to read to kids starting when they're first born. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll talk with two literacy specialists about the latest research on early reading, and they'll share some tips for caregivers of young children. Maine Calling snuggles up by the fire with a good picture book. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Reading is fundamental to learning, but many Maine children are not reading well enough. According to the Annie E. Casey Foundation, more than 63% of fourth graders are considered not proficient in reading. How can we improve as a state? What are the best ways to encourage young people to read or read more? How soon should parents start reading to their children? This month, the Maine Department of Education is sponsoring the Read to Me Challenge. The challenge encourages adults to read to children at least 15 minutes a day. Well, with me in our studio to discuss literacy, especially early childhood literacy, Leanne Larson, who's a Maine Department of Education literacy specialist, and Shannon Schnagel, an early literacy consultant at the Maine State Library. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks, Jennifer, for having us.
And as always, we want to hear from you. What steps do you take to help make your children into good readers? What would you like to know from these literacy specialists? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start with that statistic from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. According to the report, kids count, 63% of Maine fourth graders don't read at a proficient level. That's only up one percentage point from a decade ago. Leanne, do you think that report is accurate? And if so, why is it so hard to move that number?
Yeah. So NAEP is pretty consistent data for us. And that's the source of information that the NEA Casey Foundation uses for that statistic. And I think what's important to keep in mind with that particular piece of data is that in order for kids to reach that proficient level, we're really expecting them to be able to perform at a with literacy skills that are going to help them be very successful in college and careers. We get a lot more of our kids to what we consider a basic level of literacy so that they can read material. It's not that we're saying that they're not able to read. They just can't read at the higher levels, the more complex text, which is going to make it difficult for them down the line. And what we know is that if kids aren't read to regularly throughout their childhood, from the time they're born right up through the elementary years and even into middle school and high school, they're not getting the exposure to the vocabulary development, to the conceptual understanding, which is one of the pieces that holds a lot of kids back from being able to read text that's complex enough that they can demonstrate a proficient level of reading on an assessment like the NAEP.
So even though that one number that's, you know, used widely is not budging a lot, if we could dig down into the data, we would see that reading rates and reading ability is improving, just maybe not as
right.
much as we would hope.
We're not getting kids to the level of proficiency that we want to see and that we know they're going to need in the jobs that they are going to be in our country today and in the future, as well as their ability to be productive citizens. You know, in order to understand what's going on in the news, to take part in your community, you have to have a pretty high level of literacy. One of the ways I often think about it is, you know, there was a time when being literate, highly literate, was a cultural elective, and now it's really a cultural imperative because it's pretty tough to be able to accomplish what you want to accomplish if you can't interact with the sophisticated forms of technology that we have, the technical manuals that you have to be able to navigate in the workplace, the communication skills that you need to have. So we've got to work harder at getting more of our kids to those higher levels of proficiency.
Shannon Schnagel, you're an early literacy specialist, and I'm trying to figure out when is the right time to start reading to your kids. I remember having my babies on my lap and looking forward to the day when they would do something with a book other than chew on it.
Right. That's very true. And believe it or not, chewing on books is a developmental stage and is part of getting ready to read. People should start reading to babies the moment they're born. Babies are getting used to books, and they are starting to connect being read to with being loved. Because usually when you read to a little baby, you're holding them and you're cuddling them. You're focused on the baby. And they love that attention, of course, and they know that they get that attention when they're being read to. So right off the bat, babies are connecting reading with cuddling and being loved. And that the importance of that can't be overstated.
One thing I thought was interesting when I was reading up for this program today was the importance of simple rhymes, like nursery rhymes. I didn't know that. I wish I had known that. Tell me why simple rhymes like nursery rhymes are so important in child's development.
Well, one skill that really helps children get ready to read is rhyming. It's the breaking down of words. The kids don't realize that they're learning this important skill, but think how much when you're learning to read, you are rhyming. If you learn the word rat, and then you figure out you can just take the R away and put in an M for mat, take that away, put in a C, you've just made a huge jump with your reading, but you don't remember that you'd been getting all of those rhymes and they were teaching you that. So understanding the sounds that words are made up of are really important. And in fact, the silly Mother Goose rhymes with made up words and that make no sense, those silly words are made up of really fun sounds that kids like to copy. And that teaches them how words break down. Although again, it's secretly teaching them. They don't really know that they're learning anything.
Leanne, talk to me about the Read to Me Challenge. Who are you challenging and what are you challenging those people to do?
So we're challenging everyone across the state who can read with a child, whether they are actually reading the text to a child, maybe children are reading to them, maybe they're just listening to a book on tape, if that's what is comfortable for them to do. But we're asking folks to do that for at least 15 minutes, capture it in some way in a visual format. So it could be a photo of you reading with a child. It could be a short video clip. Could be just a picture of the books that you read together. Post it on social media, or even just use email if that's most comfortable for you. And then challenge others. You can be challenging your friends, your colleagues, your family members, to also read for 15 minutes with a child.
Have you had I know this started last week. Have you had a response so far?
We have. We've had quite a bit of response, really. We've been following, obviously, our Department of Education Facebook page and Twitter accounts where there's lots of activity going on. And then people are using their own social networking. But I've been getting a lot of emails from schools and organizations across the state that are engaged in the challenge and have been helping to promote the challenge. And they're sending me terrific examples of ways in which they're implementing that.
Okay. I want to ask you something, Shannon. Is it important, does it make a difference whether children are reading a book or reading on some sort of pad? I mean, if somebody has a Kindle or something like that, is there a difference for young children?
There is a difference for ages 0 to 2. Ages 0 to 2 don't really have the brain building or capacity to understand things that are flat. They have a hard time seeing screen images and realizing that those screen images have anything to do with the real world at all. Now, if a parent, of course, is just reading off of a Kindle or some sort of, iPad, that makes no difference whatsoever. But if you're reading a picture book together with a child ages 0 to 2, they're really not getting as much out of it. Now, older than that, ages 3 and above, you read however you want. And in fact, a magazine, a newspaper, a comic book, we don't really care what is being read. As long as it's being read, it all has the same impact.
All right. Leanne, how much is the challenge in, you know, sort of getting this population that has trouble reading to a proficient level? How much is the challenge lack of being read to, lack of exposure to books, and how much of the challenge is physical problems? For example, undiagnosed eyesight problems, or you know, we're hearing a lot right now about lead in water. I mean, how many of these children, how many children out there have a physical reason they have difficulty reading and it's not been diagnosed?
Yeah, so the percentage of children in any given school system in our state is going to vary a little bit, but there's usually anywhere from 5 to maybe 10% of kids in a school's population that may have more difficulty learning how to read than other students might. And certainly that plays into it. And you mentioned one really important issue that I think probably we need to do a better job of helping both parents and teachers understand, and that is eye muscle development. Interestingly, there was a time when we didn't really start teaching kids to read much before first grade. And now, as our kids are coming into kindergarten, they're learning a whole lot more about reading than they used to be. And what happens when you look at children's text is that it starts out with nice big print, nice big spacing between the lines, and it's very helpful for a child's eye muscle coordination because that coordination isn't fully developed for most kids until they're in about second grade. So if they start reading more difficult text early on, the text tends to get smaller, the print size is smaller, the lines are closer together, and that's difficult for kids to track. And so it's helpful for parents to know that you can look for books that have larger print for your child if they are reading more proficiently, more quickly. You can also use bookmarks underneath the print to help them drag that down to keep their place. But certainly eye muscle coordination is one of those issues. I think another piece that we're working much harder on now with our educators in our school systems is how to do a little bit more with screening to be able to catch kids more quickly who may have certain needs, need more practice or more specific explicit instruction with some of the parts, the foundational pieces of learning how to read, so that we can provide that instruction more systematically as they're coming into school and to hopefully prevent some of the challenges from surfacing.
Shannon, what are some of the warning signs if you're reading to your children age 3 and 4 and they're not doing this, maybe you should have it checked out? What are you looking for?
Well, there has been some research, although not replicated very much, that kids who can't rhyme themselves in ages 3 to 5, most kids should be able to rhyme. You might want to take them to the doctor. There is a very tenuous connection between that and later difficulty reading. But there aren't, if you're reading aloud to a child, there actually aren't that many warning signs, I will say. In fact, a lot of people worry about attention span. Kids are listening even if they're doing something else, and that is totally fine. In fact, there are a ton of books that are very action-oriented where kids shouldn't be sitting still during those books. There's a book called From Head to Toe by Eric Carle, and the kids should be acting out the animal movements on every single page. So even attention span, they're listening. They're probably listening, and you can just keep reading, and that is not a warning sign. And I would actually like to point that out.
Interesting. So if the child is on the floor with blocks or Legos or something and you're reading to that child, that counts.
That totally counts. Mm-hmm. The child is listening.
That it reminds me of a experience with my own daughters. you know, as a literacy specialist, you certainly want to be reading to your children all the time. And I used to get really frustrated because my oldest daughter would be playing and didn't appear to be listening to anything. And one of the things I ended up starting to do was read to her while she was in the bathtub. And she would keep playing in the bathtub. But I can remember her, you know, one time saying, "Mommy, how come you're not reading to me today while I'm in my bath?" You know, and asking that. And, you know, so that was like the clue that, you know, she really is listening to everything that we're saying. One thing that I wanted to pick up on that Shannon was talking about, in terms of early signs, I think one thing for parents to pay close attention to is your child starting to build some vocabulary, and are they talking? Because that oral language is really foundational to their ability to learn to read later on. You know, we can teach kids how to decode the words that are on the page. We can teach them how to pronounce those words. But if they don't know what the words mean, then what they read really isn't going to make much sense to them. And so early vocabulary development, early oral language skills are pretty predictive of later ability to read. And that is something that parents, if they're not seeing much development in that area, that they can get some support for early on.
And where would someone turn?
Usually the first step is just going to your primary care physician or pediatrician's office and talking with them about it. Then we have something called Child Development Services in our state, which is a wonderful, wonderful screening program initially to figure out if it does seem that the child has a special need that needs some extra support. And then Child Development Services will help to line that up, and it's almost always at no cost. So it's a great service to know about. And pediatricians' offices are terrific about linking parents and families together with Child Development Services.
Great. And we'll post a link to Child Development Services on the MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. We do have to take a break. When we come back, your comments and questions about early childhood literacy. This is Main Calling.
You make Main Calling possible, as do literacy volunteers, Waterville area, seeking volunteers to tutor area adults. Learn more at lvwaterville.com. And Darling's Audi, committed to helping their customers experience the thrill of the ride with the 2016 A6 Quattro. Darling'sAudi.com.
So much of what bills itself as news coverage these days is actually light entertainment. So many news programs are filled with shouting, bickering, and hyperbole, partisan news coverage, and making drama out of nothing. You turn to Maine Public Radio and NPR News to get away from all that. You turn to us for real journalism without fluff, from multiple perspectives that can help you make up your own mind without trying to make it up for you. You turn to us to learn about new breakthroughs, new ideas, and for stories that are uplifting and tell you about people who are fighting to make something better. All these reasons you turn to Maine Public Radio and NPR News are also great reasons to support it. You're invested in the way that Maine Public Radio approaches news coverage. So how about investing to keep it around? I'm Scott Simon, asking you to go online right now and have your donation counted toward the Super Thursday one-day membership drive.
Join us for Super Thursday coming up February 11th. That's this Thursday.
My name is Max. My world is fire and blood.
What does the new Mad Max Fury Road film have in common with the animated film Happy Feet? Australian director George Miller, who wrote and directed both. He made his directing debut with the first Mad Max film in 1979 and also wrote the film Babe. Join us on the next Fresh Air.
Tune in to Fresh Air on Maine Public Radio tonight at 7 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Early Childhood Literacy. With me in our studio, Leanne Larson is a Maine DOE literacy specialist. Shannon Schnagel is an early literacy consultant at the Maine State Library. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Shannon, before the break, we were talking about how important it is for parents and caregivers to read to very, very young children. But what if you're listening to this program and you're not really a very good reader, and that's, you know, you're not comfortable reading to your child? What can someone do?
There are so many ways to prepare your child to read, even if you're not a great reader yourself. First of all, reading the pictures in a picture book, making up the story and not worrying about the text is a really legitimate and, in fact, important way to prepare kids to read. It's helping them with their narrative skills, their way to tell a story and interpreting the pictures. That is crucial. So just read the pictures in a book if you're not sure about the text. Other ways, as we were talking about before, rhyme, sing, tell stories while you're in the car, narrate parts of your life, like maybe narrate making your peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And as we were talking about earlier with vocabulary, make sure you have conversations with your child. In our very busy, busy lives, it's easy to give a lot of instructions and not take the time to actually converse with our child. And conversing with your child is a great way to find out if they do have the vocabulary mm-hmm. that Leanne was talking about. They might, and just with those busy lives, not get to express it very much. So there is so much you can do to get your child ready to read in kindergarten, even if you can't read very well yourself.
And Leanne, we're talking about early childhood literacy, but you want parents to keep reading to their kids.
Yeah.
Until when?
Oh, as long as you can fit it in. And I mean, it's, you know, I think all of us, you get very excited as a parent when you see your child starting to read. And your kids are excited and they want to read to you. And certainly you're going to want to listen to them. But don't stop reading text to your child. Think at that point about what can I read to my child that maybe they can't read yet on their own, because you're exposing them to more sophisticated vocabulary, concepts that they wouldn't be able to access on their own. You're showing them different types of books, different reading material that they might get interested in. And our, you know, kids in middle elementary school, they're starting to develop interests in a lot of different topics. So it's a wonderful way to let them continue to learn about those topics in texts that they might not be able to access themselves. Even with high school kids, it's well worth it. I know one of my daughters, when she'll get a new novel to read in her high school, sometimes she's not really sure about getting going with it. You know, you see a lot of resistance sometimes with teenagers in reading. So one of the tricks that I use is I will often just read aloud the first chapter of the book to her. And she loves to hear that read to her, and it's the hook she needs to get into the text. And then she'll take it from there. Another little trick to use.
Well, we are going to go to the phones now. We're going to start with Sylvia calling from Weston. Hi, Sylvia. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a story about putting those cloth books in a crib from day one. My two sons got them, and this was in 67, 69. And after that, whenever they had an interest, this was pre-computer, in something, they would be like dinosaurs or something like that, snakes. And I'd say, okay, let's go to the library, and we'd get books. I wish I had the money to set up a foundation that would give these cloth books to every infant that leaves the hospital. Because my sons, who inherited, I think, my tendency toward dyslexia and dyscalculia, did so well because of starting in the crib looking at books. And at the age, 6 or 7 months when they're sitting up, you go into the room when they were supposed to be taking a nap, and I'd find them with those little cloth books looking at them. So they're looking at those symbols and trying to decipher them from day one when you do this and put them in their crib.
Shannon, do you like the cloth books?
I do like the cloth books. I'm a big fan of those and board books in general. Board books, those are the picture books that are every single page is made of cardboard. Those can take a beating. They can be eaten, they can be thrown, they can be sat upon, they can be fed to the dog, and they just last and last. But I would like to remind all Mainers that you do leave the hospital with books. They're not cloth books, but the organization Raising Readers makes sure that babies leave the hospital with books. That's every single Maine child. And after that, every well child visit that a Maine child goes to, they get another book through age 5. So by the time they're 5, they could have a library of up to 12 books. So well, no one is without books.
I was pushing the cloth books because of the fact that they're sitting in the crib all the time.
Yes.
And my success story is that both children went to Yale University and graduated from there. So, and it was, I think, their interest in reading that started the whole thing.
All right. Well, Sylvia, thank you for calling. We're going to move on. We're going to head to Karen from New Sharon. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I guess I have a couple thoughts. First off, I'm a bookseller. I have been since the early 90s. And I also have a 9-year-old son who is a very avid reader. But I like to tell customers who come into the store looking for books for their reluctant readers, especially in those middle grades, that to promote reading to them, and not for all the very valid reasons that your guests have said, but also because I feel like when they're going through the struggle of learning to be more proficient with reading, that we can really just focus on the skill and not the pleasure that you can get from reading. And so by continuing to read to your kids, you're still providing them the pleasure of why we read, which I think is really important. And then, because I am a bookseller, I will make a plug for children's librarians and booksellers who can recommend any book. We always read the books that we sell, so we really know what kids are reading, what's really current, what will fit their reading level as well. And that's just all I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks, Karen. One thing I also read this morning, which I thought was interesting, is that it's really important to read books over and over and over again. So, going to the library, getting a whole bunch of books, reading them once to your kid and returning them isn't necessarily the only good way to do it.
No. In fact, for brain development, reading over and over and, in fact, doing anything over and over is crucial. And I know that is really hard for adults. When you are reading the same book for the 150th time, you are...
I'm thinking of Goodnight Moon.
Oh, my goodness. And a lot of other books, too. For me, it was a book called Put Me in the Zoo that my parents probably wanted to secretly bury in the backyard. But as you are thinking, please don't let me have to read that book again, imagine your child's brain becoming stronger and growing, because that is literally what's happening.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. The email is talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Headed to Gorham and Samantha. Hi, Samantha. Go ahead.
Hi there. So I have a son who is 7 years old, and he's quite proficient. I've read to him since he was born for at least 30 minutes a night, because that's what my mother always did. But my question is, if you have any advice on or when he might start to enjoy reading on his own. I thought we had it with the Captain Underpants series, which is that book that I want to throw out, because he and I have read it to each other probably 4 or 5 times, the first book.
Only 4 or 5?
Well, it's quite long, and he's very proud of reading chapter books. He likes to read them to me. But when can I expect, because I don't want to push him to read. I feel like then he wouldn't enjoy it. But picking up a book on his own, and start to read, in his off time, that's kind of where I'm...
that happens at different points for all kids. I think that, it's not unusual for you not to see kids necessarily picking up books as a hobby until maybe later in their elementary school years. Some kids, it's even middle school. And I'll tell you, I have a daughter who really did not take up reading as a hobby until she was a junior in high school. And it can take time for them to maybe build that enjoyment of reading as a pleasurable activity. That's one of the reasons, and I think the guest who had called in previously made a wonderful point about that pleasure of listening to books being read. I think you keep giving kids lots of opportunities to experience books with you, to encourage them, When you see them picking up books to read, talk to them about what they're reading, because that shows that you're interested in what they're reading about and you're giving them that positive reinforcement for reading. But don't get discouraged because that can, you know, that can happen. As a former classroom teacher, I used to teach second and third grade, and I had a lot of students that would come in, particularly as second graders, not really picking up books on their own. They'd read because, I had a home reading assignment that I would give them to do. But I would talk to parents at conferences, and they would say, you know, I just don't see them picking up a book on their own unless I ask them to do that. And by the time they were leaving third grade, a whole lot more of them were choosing to read on their own.
But don't worry.
He tends to choose books in his classroom that are too easy for him, is what his teacher will say.
Yeah, and you know what? That's really normal, too. Some kids just really want to reread those books again and again because it's comfortable for them. You can always encourage your child to read something a little bit more difficult and then also go back and read those favorite books again and again and again. And eventually, they're probably going to want to expand into other books. Or they're going to find a series that they really love, and then they want to eat up every book in that series. And series books are great for promoting reading.
I'd like to say, too, don't forget that it actually doesn't have to be a book.
Right.
I have a librarian friend whose son, until he was 10, read nothing but how-to manuals and cheat books for his video games. It could be magazines. Maybe he reads the back of baseball cards and he needs to be taken to the nonfiction baseball section of the library. Comics are legitimate reading. Graphic novels are legitimate reading. So just a reminder that they are getting great experience reading, even if it's not an actual book.
I found, too, that I have a reluctant reader as well, and that she gets great recommendations from her peers.
Yes.
Instead of going to a bookseller or a librarian or a teacher, there's something different about having someone your own age tell you how fantastic a book was.
And that's so true, on many different topics. Kids love to go to their peers.
Thank you, Samantha, for your call. We're going to move to North Anson and Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling in about the Read to Maine Challenge. We're engaged in it right now here. And tomorrow night we have an exciting event where two Maine authors, Karen Bessie Pease, who wrote Grumble Bluff, and Maria Padian, who wrote Brett McCarthy Work in Progress, are going to join us, one of them by Skype, and read aloud to our Girls Talk book group. This is middle school girls and adult women mentors. So I have challenged the two Maine authors to read to us, and they will do that tomorrow night, and then they in turn are going to challenge the girls and the other adults to meet the challenge and pass it on, so that hopefully middle school girls will read to a younger sibling or possibly a child that they babysit for, and kind of keep the literacy initiative alive through the generation.
Well, terrific, Lisa. And if you have access to a computer, I'd love for you to post something about the event on their MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page.
Sure thing.
Thanks so much for calling. We do have to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Husson University, strengthening Maine's future by preparing the pharmacists, nurse practitioners, and mental health counselors of tomorrow. Husson.edu. And Casella, committed to increasing recycling rates while reducing residential trash and landfill loads through zero sort recycling. Casella. Giving resources new life.
Getting up early is important to meeting the expectations of Morning Edition. Hi, Erwin Gratz here. And letting you know ahead of time about our upcoming February 11th one-day Super Thursday radio campaign is important, too. You can contribute right now, and your support will count toward meeting those important Super Thursday goals. So, whether you're upgrading your Evergreen membership or becoming a new member, you can contribute now and do your part for our next Super Thursday, February 11th. Thanks for your support.
And coming up in just about 20 minutes in our 1 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, World Affairs, World Affairs welcomes William McCants, fellow for the Center of Middle Eastern Policy at the Brookings Institution. He'll be discussing how religious fervor, strategic calculation, and doomsday prophecy have shaped the Islamic State's past and foreshadows its future. Again, coming up this afternoon in 20 minutes on World Affairs here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Maine's Literacy Initiative, the Read to Me Challenge. We're also learning about early literacy. With me in our Portland studio, Shannon Schnagel. She is an early literacy consultant at the Maine State Library. Leanne Larson is a Maine Department of Education literacy specialist. Join our conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Andrew. He says, I greatly enjoy your program. Thank you. I'm a graduate student with a newborn. I end up reading a great deal for my studies. Would it be worthwhile to read my text aloud to my infant? I understand the subject matter will be out of their realm, but is the vocalization of language helpful? Shannon.
Absolutely. You read whatever you want to your baby, and if you can cuddle your baby and improve his vocabulary while studying, I think that's great. Yes, the tone of your voice, the excitement with which you read the books, which may actually help you study depending on the material. And again, the cuddling and the attention that you're paying to your baby is fantastic. Heck, read the newspaper, read magazines. Your baby doesn't care what you're reading, and it all helps your baby get ready to read in kindergarten.
There we go. It might make it a little more palatable, too, some graduate school text. That's great. We're going to go to Rockland and Greg. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for including me, Jennifer. I want to talk about a little different angle on a reluctant reader. My son, who is now 21 and continues to be a voracious reader, was reluctant to start reading. We began reading to him when he was an infant and continued through his toddler years and on, and it was a wonderful, rich interaction from both me and his mom. And he got it so involved with the stories. I mean, at age 4, a friend of ours in England sent us the first Harry Potter book, which we read to him, and he was riveted by it. But when he started reading for himself, he was reluctant because the language, the development of the characterization and themes were below where his mind was. So he didn't want to read. And then once he finally did, he's never stopped. And I'm curious if the panel has heard of kids who were reluctant to begin developing reading on their own from that angle.
Yeah, that's definitely something that happens for some of our kids. And I think it actually underscores why it is so important to continue reading aloud with your child, because it sounds like you and your wife continued to do that, and that enabled your child to experience all kinds of wonderful stories, probably learned about different concepts that were interesting, and kept your child engaged and learning. And had you not done that, and he wasn't all that engaged in the beginning levels of reading, he might not have stayed as motivated about reading.
And you said your son is 21, so this doesn't help you, but great strides have been made in the books that are being written for beginning readers, ones that are hilarious, ones that do have deeper character development, ones that are series that build character development and plot over time. And this is a relatively new phenomenon, but I think it's something that will help those reluctant readers that just think the beginning readers are too boring. Because, I mean, that happens to a lot of kids. So it's better now, but I'm really glad that your son overcame that.
Yeah, well, thank
you. He did and continues to read passionately and just finished his undergraduate work as a double major in philosophy and anthropology.
All right.
Well, Greg, thanks so much for calling and sharing your observations. We're going to go to Skowhegan and Alan. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to make one comment and ask one question. One is I spent a career in public education, and I can tell you that there's no reading instruction beyond sixth grade. And so although you can look before sixth grade, and you don't see the large disparities at all you see in later years. And that tells me that society is really not that interested in truly funding reading. And there may be a good reason for that, and here's where the question comes in. If you think about it, reading at its most fundamental level is nothing more than a way to transfer knowledge and information. And right in today's society, reading has a lot of competitors. And I teach economics at the University of Maine now, so I guess I could say that it may well be that kids are substituting out and choosing other ways to receive their information, that reading is archaic, and that what we're witnessing here is just the very beginnings of a decline that's going to make reading something that a minority of people do, that the true communication will be done with graphics, with video interfacing, with any one of a number of different ways that's going to happen in the next few years. I know your guests are part of what I think you can think of as the reading industry, but do they think it possible that reading may not be fundamental, that in fact success in the future may depend upon getting your information in ways other than reading?
Alan, it's a really interesting question, especially because we're on a radio program and we are talking over the airwaves today. You have thoughts, Leanne?
Yeah. So one of the things that many of us have been talking about now for a while, and I think you've seen quite a shift. You know, there was a time when if you used the word literacy, you would be pretty much using that synonymously with reading. That would be the word that would come to mind. What we try to help people understand in today's world is that being literate means more than just being able to read, that it involves all kinds of different ways that we communicate. And I think that you're absolutely right that the way in which we communicate information in our world today is not just through written words. We use a whole lot of other avenues, whether it's over radio, through conversation, through technology, through visual imaging. And that is a big part of what we have to help our students learn how to navigate in this world. So I think there's still that vital importance that reading with kids helps to build a lot of the skills that they're going to need, even as communicators in the world. But you're right, we have to be broadening our approaches to how we work with digital technology and other media to help kids be able to navigate that and make sense of the world around them.
Alan, thanks for calling. We're going to move to Scarborough and Leah. Hi, Leah, go ahead.
Hello. I'm calling again, speaking of like the reluctant readers, the second, third grade readers, that sort of thing. I read to my son every night, same old books over and over and over again, and we started reading more and more challenging books, but he wouldn't pick up books on his own. And at around second grade, he was diagnosed with dyslexia, and we realized that reading those books on his own, he could only read books that he thought other kids would judge him as looking dumb. So we started introducing him to graphic novels, The Bone Series, and a few other books that are a little bit more adult in their concept, but easier to manage for a reader that maybe have difficulties at that age.
Okay, and Shannon, you like graphic novels for that
population. I love
graphic
novels and comic books, too. I mean, Garfield is still incredibly popular, as is Calvin and Hobbes. Graphic novels and comic books are great. And our previous caller was talking about different ways of communicating, and we know there's a rise of infographics right now, which I really love. You need to have visual literacy, picture literacy, in order to read an infographic, and you get that from reading comics and graphic novels and picture books, where the pictures are instrumental in the content of the story.
Thank you, Leah. We're going to go to Milton, New Hampshire, and Donna. Hi, Donna. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I could tell you tons, reams and reams and reams, or books and books and books, I guess, appropriate for this, because it was a huge part of my children growing up. I'm in my 70s now. My youngest child is in mid-40s. But we read continually from the time they were very small, all through elementary, all through high school. And one of the ways I think that was really helpful, and this might help other people, was that when my children would bring books home from school, I would ask them about it, and we would get into book discussions. That they would be reading the books, and they would tell me about it. And sometimes I would read it too. Well, pretty soon it turned around the other way. They wanted to know what I was reading, and I was obviously reading adult literature. And one of the most surprising things was that they wanted me to read my adult literature to them, you know, as they got into middle school, high school, and not so much high school, but late middle school. And because we did that, they were exposed to really complex language and ideas and things that they would never have picked up out of the children's books. And it was just a really rewarding experience, and I think I'll close and let you go on to other people. But I'd like to share that the last time my three children were together in one place, right after they had all had left home, they came together, and all of a sudden it got really quiet. I went in, and they were sitting lined up on the living room couch, and one of them piped up, "Mom, would you read to us?"
Oh, that's cute. Well, thanks for your call, Donna. And she's not the only person who's talked about maybe reading above what a kid can read for themselves.
Yeah, that it's a wonderful way to help kids access information that may not be something they can access on their own yet. Keeps them interested and builds that enthusiasm for learning, which is, you know, a big part of why they're learning how to read in the first place, is to learn more about the world around them. And we start doing that when we start reading with our kids right from the time that they're born. We're building knowledge of the world.
And I think that's true also at that point where kids are starting to learn to read themselves. It's frustrating because you're spending so much of your brain power decoding the text that you may completely miss the plot of the book because the act of reading is so difficult.
Right.
And so then if you're being read aloud to things that are deeper and more interesting to you, that sort of balances out the difficulty of reading yourself.
So reading out loud to your child, let's say you're reading your child's 7 and you're reading to them Harry Potter. Would you recommend, Leanne, that you, as you're reading, follow along with your finger and get your child to be looking at the words, or not so much? It's really the idea of listening to a story that matters.
Right. I think that's the most important part. I mean, certainly as kids, as you're reading with kids, particularly in preschool, early elementary grades, you can model for them how print works from left to right, and that is an important skill for them to understand, and you can do some of that. But when you're reading a novel to them, I think they really just want to listen and get lost in what you're reading, and it's that enjoyment. And I bet, you know, in your last caller, just the sound of a trusted adult's voice is something that stays with you for a lifetime. And you know, many of us can look back very fondly on the voices of the folks who read to us and treasure that.
All right, so we're tight on time. I know there's some more facts about the Read to Me Challenge we want to get out here. What do you want the public to know about the Read to Me Challenge, Leanne?
Yeah, just we want people to participate. Many folks have kids nearby that they could read to. But maybe you have kids who live a distance away. You can use technology to do that. You could Skype and read, or you could read over FaceTime. Find a child in your neighborhood that you might be able to read with. Go to your local school and see if you can do some reading with children there. Older kids can read to younger kids. You can read to your dog. You can read to your cat.
And there's a hashtag involved.
There is a hashtag. So when you post on social media, please use hashtag read to me or hashtag read aloud me. That's just helpful to be able to follow what's going on with the challenge across the state. And you know, we conceived of this challenge because we wanted to build more public awareness for the importance of reading with children. So it's helpful to us to be able to see how that's taking shape and to learn from the various examples that we see happening all across our state.
And Shannon, I'm guessing your last word is it's never too early.
It is never, never too early. Yeah, from even in utero. Feel free. I have some friends who are going to take part in this, and you will see the husband reading to his wife's belly to take part in this Read to Me challenge.
All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Leanne Larson is Maine Department of Education Literacy Specialist. Shannon Schnagel is an early literacy consultant at the Maine State Library. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about everyday wellness. Learn what simple steps you can take to lead a healthier life. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.